pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three is now underway. Jam-packed hour for you here as we close out the week. Coming up in about 30 minutes from now, our returning champion State Senator Chris Elliott will be with us. A lot to talk about there, so make sure you stick around for that. But joining us now to begin this hour, he is the publisher of Alabama Daily News, also the host of Capital Journal and Alabama Public Television. Our good buddy Todd Stacey is with us. Todd, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Well, election cycles are always tedious. At this point, I mean, this isn't your first rodeo either. But I thought the primary went relatively smooth. This runoff has just been kind of silly season.
Oh, yeah. A lot of chippiness out there. And I guess it's to be expected because what we have right now are some really close races. Like, if you think back to 2022, that was the Katie Britt race where she ended up winning. By the time it got to the runoff, it was pretty clear she was going to win, right? And same thing with other races. This is not so clear. And so everybody is, throwing in everything in the kitchen sink at this race. And so that's, here we are, 4 days out or 3 days out. And there's a lot of chippiness. So that's one thing. It's very close. All these races are very close, but also there's an understanding out there that the number of voters is just going to be limited. Turnout's probably going to be pretty light. And so that universe is just so small. The margins are so narrow, that they're trying to get everything they can. So sometimes it can seem a little desperate. I think that's pretty fair assessment right here toward the end.
Well, and I guess the last time it was probably 18 with the lieutenant governor's race with Twinkle and Ainsworth, and then I don't. It's a different world now though, because just the online social media presence is way more steady, or more. There's just so much more out there 8 years later. It's kind of funny watching how this has changed.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think back to when I was involved in campaigns. I mean, there was a little bit of Facebook and whatnot and Twitter, but the way to reach voters was television, radio, and mail. And so you had to kind of confine your messaging to those media. These days, I mean, like I saw you shared some kind of AI-generated thing earlier this morning. Things can go viral and maybe even reach more people through that media. And so, it's a whole different world. I am always curious about, the smart consultants and the smart campaign managers who figure out a way to make that kind of stuff work. Because I do think you can be too silly, and overreach, be too cute by half, that kind of thing. So it to me, it does separate the smart, intentional candidates and campaigns from the less serious.
Yeah, I think you're right. But it's also this, and if you're down a few points in the polls, and these pollsters internally, I think they got a good idea. Maybe they don't release a lot of this to the public, but you're more prone to throw these Hail Marys, it seems like.
Yeah, and I've been intrigued by the polls. We've published a couple of them. Before the primary, we conducted our own, as we tend to do every cycle with Great Television. And, you can't really just look at one, but you can look at several and trend lines start to develop. And I do think you've got that at this point. And that's what's showing, that they're all pretty tight. I think, there's some argument that the attorney general race is a little, there's some separation there, but anything could still happen in that race. But I definitely think Senate is tight as a tick, and same thing for lieutenant governor.
Yeah, and so it's just a little chippy out there, but we go through this And then, like, a month from now, Todd, it'll be like, what were you even talking about that for? It's always that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just, hey, it's towards the end. It's the home stretch. I just got finished interviewing Barry Moore and Jared Hudson back-to-back, which is kind of interesting for consistency's sake. Those interviews are going to air tonight on Capital Journal. But asking them, you know, about these attacks that are going on, right? Like giving Barry Moore a chance to respond to these things about his military record and all that. But also asking him, yeah, hey, did you overstate things? Giving him a chance to respond to that. Same thing with Jared Hudson. Like, is it fair what you're saying? Are you, you know, minimizing the service of National Guard members, of reservists, things like that? So I think it's important to ask those questions to get their answers and let them respond in real time.
Something that we got to do, Todd, I think us in the media, after this is all over, this runoff and Tuesday comes and goes, we got to have a discussion about polling in this state. It's all over the place. And some, I mean, I know that every campaign has, you know, they release internal polls to try to drive a narrative or whatever. But I just don't think we have a really good grasp on how to poll Alabama and getting a real honest assessment of what's going on. And you know, whatever you want to say about polls and people not responding or things of that sort. But I do think that they matter because it can in some ways impact voter behavior.
Oh, sure. I mean, the biggest way it does is for folks that are super tuned in, you know, you want to back the winner. And so if a poll comes out that shows somebody, you know, out front with a huge lead, you want to do something like that. There was a big, that was a big deal back in 2022, as we were talking about with Katie Britt and Mike Durant and Mo Brooks, because it was our signal poll with Gray Television that really surprised a lot of people. It surprised me. I mean, the results came in as surprising me, showing that Katie had a fighting chance to actually get into that runoff, and it did change things. I think it, I think it's like 3 days later or 2 days later, Trump unendorsed Mo Brooks. You can't tell me that didn't in some ways have to do with the polling, right? And so, yeah, it does change things. Look, I've always, just as a matter of practice and as a publisher, tried to be discerning. We get sent polls all the time, as I'm sure you do too. We have a rule that, hey, we got to have methodology. You got to tell me, you know, who is behind it, who's paid for this. It's okay if it's internal, you know, that's fine, but we just got to know that. And we've got to tell people how the poll was conducted so that people can judge it for themselves. And ultimately we'll find out how close these numbers were in a couple of days.
Well, and it gets back to sort of methodology, and we need to have a discussion about that, because what I think happens, and you have a lot of maybe out of state pollsters come in and they just look at Alabama and they say, well, this is what happened 4 years ago, or this is what happened 8 years ago or 2 years ago. But the state is so dynamic, because there may be a runoff in this corner of the state that cycle and not this cycle, or vice versa. And there's always things, if you kind of look, you need to look at these things at least at a minimum on a, like a congressional district scale or something like that. And really to have a grasp and know what's going on in the politics locally to get kind of an idea of what the sample ought to be and how to weight it. And then, I mean, that's some hard stuff and that's very difficult, but you can't just say, well, X amount of voters came out last time around, and we're going to assume that that's the number of voters who come out this time, because I think that's why some of these polls are just all over the place.
Yeah, and look, I used to do polling in political races, and the toughest part of any poll when you're putting it together is figuring out the universe, figuring out the demographics, the age, the makeup of the electorate, because you're guessing. So yeah, you do look at previous years. You need to have a year that corresponds. Like, it makes no sense to like it would make no sense this year to base a voting universe on a presidential year, on 2024. Make no sense. It's completely different from primary to general. So, yeah, you do want to go back to 2022. You do want to go back to 2018, just as you're trying to figure out. But, you know, in this runoff, the pollsters do have the benefit of knowing who came out on the primary election day. And so I'd like to think it's a little more accurate in terms of knowing the universe of voters. But what the biggest, head scratcher this year in terms of the polls is all the undecideds. I mean, this last one that came out, I think Yellowhammer reported on it, and we got sent it to you. I just don't really love releasing stuff this late in the game. But like 20-something percent undecided in like the Senate race and the Attorney General race. I mean, 20%, that's a lot for a runoff. And it makes me wonder if those people are going to go vote at all.
Right.
I really think they're not. I'd be surprised if more than half wouldn't vote.
Where is the bar we're putting here for what a likely voter is? Because someone says they're a likely voter, then that's the green light. And that's where this has been true this entire cycle. The number of undecideds has been abnormally high.
Yeah. And there's some reasons for that. I think the governor's contest is a big, big one. And yes, that's another key part of forming your universe is you have to be tough. Like, it shouldn't just be one question. It shouldn't just be, are you going to go vote on Tuesday or whatever? Good polls generally ask a couple of questions. Like, you can even ask, what precinct are you in, or where do you vote, or something like that, just to determine if they're actually a voter, because some folks really like to be polled. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be part of the contest here, even if they're not actually going to go vote. And so good polls want to be discerning in terms of figuring out who that likely voter is. And I agree with you, having such a high number of undecideds in a runoff, then they mean presumably they've already voted. That's a little suspect.
Well, and then we have all these new sort of mediums too with text poll. I mean, we've had text polling before, but with online, and there's a way to do it in a scientific way, I know, and get a sample that you think represents what the electorate will look like on Tuesday. But the problem is, like, the old, like, phone survey and people who actually answer their phone or landlines, yeah, or, you know, there's all these different things that's really kind of muddled it and complicated things.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's constantly evolving. You can't have just one way of reaching a voter. You got to have a mix. You got to have landlines, cell phones, and text these days. For one thing, I mean, how many phone calls do you answer from an unknown number? You know, I don't. There's so much spam out there. That's why people are doing texts and things like that. So it does make it more difficult. And yet, I mean, the reason we partner with Signal and have for years now is their results end up being pretty close over the years. They've got a pretty good track record.
Well, they were a polling firm in Montgomery for years and years and years and years. They've since moved to D.C., but you feel like with them, they kind of understand the state better than, you know, whatever other pollsters that come in and do polling for these campaigns.
Yeah, there's a comfort level with them. I've known Brent a long time. I've known John a long time, and it's just easy. Hey, we want to do a poll. We're going to work with our great television partners. They just know how to do it, and the results are pretty accurate. There have been times, I think it was maybe it was 2018 or I don't know, one of those years where Brent said, you know what, you know, we're going to repoll this because we didn't like how it didn't seem right. And so they were willing to critique their own work, which was interesting. And I really appreciated that. So, yeah, I like working with them. You know, Michael Lowry's got the Alabama poll. Obviously, he's working with the McLaughlin firm.
Right.
Very much, a lot of experience in Alabama. Been polling with him since the 2010s. So, yeah, I do think experience in a state matters.
Todd, folks want to know what you got coming up on Capital Journal this evening. And in addition to that, to get your newsletter, tell them how to do so.
Yep, Capital Journal tonight. As I mentioned, we're going to have the Senate candidates on, Barry Moore, Jared Hudson. Also going to be talking about the SNAP issue going on in the state, which is kind of a ticking time bomb. You can watch that tonight, 7:30, on Alabama Public Television. And yes, get the newsletter, aldailynews.com.
All right, Todd Stacey, ladies and gentlemen. Todd, thanks for making time for us.
All right, Jeff, be good.
All right, we'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Coming up on the program on Monday, right now we have Jennifer Fidler, one of our Monday regulars, and Dale Jackson. But I anticipate two more candidates that she'll be voting on Tuesday to join us. So we kind of put a finishing touch as we round the corner to primary runoff day. Next Tuesday. In the meantime, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we'll get to your text. Mike writes, SpaceX is up over 20% since opening today. Even the janitors, cafeteria workers who used to work there and took stock options for pay are now multi-billionaires. Well, I see that it's official that the Elon Musk is now a trillionaire. Under the technical definition here. Fired on the tragedy of Julius Caesar, Act 1, Scene 2, a public place in a dumpster by Piggly Wiggly, Brutus, a raccoon bids you beware the Ides of June. Caesar says, set the raccoon before me. Let me see his face. And then finally, yes, we were talking about Charlie the Raccoon. If you haven't been keeping up with the program today, the gossipy raccoon from the Wall household, who is just spilling the beans on all the dirt about John Wall, because as Charlie says, he knows John Wall. Damn Yankee, do you think that some of the prospective voters who claim to be undecided just don't want to admit they're going to vote for the football coach? No, I don't think that's it at all. They just may not have thought about it. It's the football coach is going to win, and the football coach is not even on the ballot. Football coach won the primary without a runoff. Now, the football coach, the former football coach, Tommy Tuberville, I assume that's who you're talking about, unless there's another coach on the ballot here. But he does have an ALGOP hearing Sunday for the steering committee. And they're going to hear apparently all of the evidence before them about Tommy Tuberville and his residency. The train driven by our friends at Rant Lanyap is going to get its hearing. Now, they've already kind of expressed some skepticism that the fix is in. Just my one critique about all that is just really relying on one Ken McFeeters as sort of the guy on the point here. I think once we get past this, I cannot see a way that the Alabama Republican Party would disqualify Tommy Tuberville. But I do think Democrats, Doug Jones, they may try. Listen, I've said this before. This is how it's explained to me. You don't have to be a resident for 7 years to run for governor. Anybody can run if the party accepts your qualifying fee and you get on the ballot. You can run for governor. You can run for lieutenant governor. They put this into the Alabama Constitution. It's a throwback to Reconstruction to keep the carpetbaggers from coming in and winning office. But being governor, taking the oath of office, being sworn in and assuming the role is where that question lies. It's not ballot access, it's being governor, and I think that's an important distinction. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I get...
Promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now, it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us. On this, what's left of this Friday morning, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, time permitting, we'll get to your text. But in the meantime, joining us on the line, he is our returning champion, one and only State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, how are you?
I am doing well. It is great to be with you.
How are you weathering election cycle 2026?
It is getting close to the end, and so I am very much looking forward to that happening, and looking forward to knowing who my delegation is in Baldwin County. We've had certainly a lot of change there, and looking forward to figuring all of that out and how we're going to move forward and continuing to work hard to get our share of road, bridge, and education dollars back in the county.
Well, I don't think you and I have talked about this as much. Just statewide stuff, all throughout this cycle, abnormally high number of undecided voters. And Todd, Stacey, and I were just talking about it. Like, what point are those undecided voters really likely voters anymore? But, like, something's really changed in the electorate. Something's really changed the way we do. Maybe it's the way we do polling. The polls are all over the place, and some are just polls meant to be messaging polls. But, like, you know, the state of election politics in Alabama really is in flux.
Oh, I certainly think it is. And it's so much less issue-based than it used to be and more almost personality-based. And I think you see that at the national level, too. But at the end of the day, I heard the rules chairman in the House, Joe Lovern, say this the other day. He said, you know, there are all these different boxes that we put issues in, right? There is the big issues of governing, right? Of budgeting, of fiscal responsibility. And then there are the big issues that deal with how our government works, how we deal with big things like education funding and school choice and increased funding for roads and bridges and everything else and tax cuts. And that's all well and good. And then this third box is all of these other things that, I mean, at the end of the day, they look good on Facebook. They're exciting to talk about, and they get people really ginned up. But I'm afraid that we're losing folks that are not paying attention to the real important daily work that goes on in the other two-thirds of things because they're just not that exciting. They're not that sexy. They don't get just people just ginned up. And at the end of the day, government's pretty boring if you do it right.
Government's boring, and when you try to make it about the policy issues, and there are varying degrees of policy perspectives throughout politics, it becomes a, do you want to win the election or do you want to win the debate trophy? Yep. And you have candidates who try to do it the right way, and then they lose the election.
And so what I try to do is both, right? You've got to make sure that you're responding to your constituents, that you're taking up issues that are important to them, but you've also got to make sure that you're doing the job and you're doing the job right. And, certainly not here to toot my own horn, but I think that balance is something that we saw in the last election, at least as far as I'm concerned, where we ended up with 73% of the vote. I'll take that. That's a win. Did I make everybody happy? No. Did I make some people mad? Yes. But if you're making everybody happy, you're probably not doing it right either.
Well, and it's just, you need that spark and you need something to get people's attention. And so I think on the other side, like, we got to evaluate this, that the media is so democratized. I'm not just talking about news media. I'm talking about all these different places where people go and their eyeballs are attracted to. So the issue here is, like, how do you make that connection with a voter? You don't do it the same way. I mean, yeah, there's like a retail politics that's always going to be there where you do knock on doors or you do go two events, but the air campaign strategy, if you will, is totally different than it even was 4 years ago.
No question. No question. I mean, back when I first started running for office 14 years ago, it was all about how much money you could raise so that you can get your message out. And I'm telling you right now, in this last election cycle or the one that we're about to finish up right now, more money isn't going to fix any candidate's problem on, even the challengers or the incumbents. That's not it anymore. People are inundated with contacts, whether that's Facebook, Instagram, whatever social media they're using that I don't even know about now that my kids are using. Text messaging, et cetera. Mail. Don't even get me started on the mail. It's way too much. And so what you've got to do is you've got to rely on depth. And it means you got to work harder as a candidate. It means you got to have been to the Lions Club, the Kiwanis Club, every single month. You've got to go to all the Republican women event. You've got to meet people where they are, and you've got to go see them consistently and constantly. You can't just show up on election day and expect to get it done. And I think some of the times we've seen incumbents fall, that's what's happened. They haven't been consistent. They haven't shown up. They hadn't shown the effort for the entire 4 years. It was we'll just get it done on election day.
Well, that's sort of the key here. Like, if you're a guy who's around in the community, like, you're the guy that you see at the gas station pumping gas and you talk to people or, you know, whatever, the diner, people still go to diners. It's always kind of a hokey news media fascination of going to the diner and talking about politics. But like you're all out in the community, you're at the high school game on Friday night. You got to do that. But that's not just something you could do. Even it's not even just election day, Senator. It's like you got to do it throughout the entire term.
You got to go on the Jeff Poore Show weekly. You got to say yes to those things. You got to talk to the media. You got to answer their questions. You can't hide. And you know plenty of politicians that have hidden from you, right? That have not been willing to take your calls, to answer your questions, to come on your show, to talk to your reporters on 1819. If you don't do that, you're going to end up in trouble. And you're right. You got to go to all the things. You got to show up. You got to meet people where they are, and they've got to know who you are. You can't just show them some glossy mailer, three months before the election and expect that to move the needle.
No, and it is coming on this program. You don't have to come on every week, but there is this sort of, I don't know, there's this philosophy about it. Like, why are you going on talk radio? It's just causing problems. It's just stirring the pot. Don't do – but, I mean, I think there's a level of accountability there, you know, that's got to be met. And maybe it's not this talk show, but there's other places you could show up, and there's just a real reluctance. And I don't know what it is, but it's sort of a phenomenon – that I've really been confronted with in Alabama politics since I got back in the Alabama game about 8 years ago. There's a real reluctance to interact with the media. And I get it. Like, there's a lot of like left wing ideological things going on in media these days, but you got to kind of pick your spots, I think.
And that's what I try to do, is pick my spots. You know, am I going to do an interview with Brian Lyman? No, I'm not. There's no point in that, right? But will I go talk to reporters about what we're doing? Some of which is the sexy stuff and the exciting stuff, and some of which is absolutely not, right? It's talking about budgets. It's talking about occupational licensing reform, business tax reform, things that matter to people, but that you can have time to articulate in the off season where folks are listening. People listen to your show. People listen to, you know, Clark Stewart's, you know, show in Foley. They listen to that stuff. And I think it's important, in addition to doing Lions Club, Kiwanis Club, Rotary, you know, to talk to people day in, day out, you know, and make sure you're explaining to them what you're doing for them. And more importantly, you're listening to what you're missing. You're listening to what they want you to do and what they need.
Well, yeah. And, but there's also this, like, I don't know, this wisdom out there that, no, you got to be able to manage the message. And it becomes not just managing, it's like micromanaging it. And you've got to just shut out all the variables and all the things that might go wrong, all the places where you might step in it. And I think that we're going to see, this is going to be the lesson, that you're going to see a lot of losing campaigns, a lot of long faces on Wednesday from those who went in that direction.
Well, one of my concerns and one of the things that I think has changed is the ability to have an honest, frank conversation, not certainly just on the radio, which you and I do all the time, but to have a conversation with a constituent or even with a fellow lawmaker and not be sure that it's not being recorded. Sorry for the double negative there. But it's concerning to me where I've seen that happen, where a constituent comes to, into a legislator's office and asks them their honest opinion on something and where they are and to speak frankly on something. And then to rebroadcast that during a campaign when you have a legislator speaking honestly with you and to turn that into some kind of campaign message. Now, is that fair game? Maybe it is. But what's that? What effect is that going to have? That's going to have the effect of legislators or elected officials around not wanting to speak unscripted ever because they're afraid they're going to be constantly recorded on every single thing that they do.
Oh yeah, and they're going to do that, and they're going to put up a guard, right? Because these guys, they don't really. It's not something that I could personally ever get away with. I can't go show up at a lawmaker's office and have like a surreptitiously recorded situation there, and I mean that's just. But no, the public's not really bound to that sort of those sort of ethics.
Well, they're not, and that's where I think you're going to see, you know, some members that and some elected officials that just shy away from that, especially on complex issues where you can take a soundbite out of context and not be able to fully explain a position on something like gaming, for instance, right? That is a complex, very complex issue, and you have somebody take a soundbite here or there and then turn it into and weaponize it during a campaign. That's unfortunate, I think, both for the public and for the elected official.
Yeah, and it happens a lot, but I guess it's just part of the world we live in now because everybody's got a Facebook page or a blog or whatever, and we you know that what it does, Senator, speaking for myself and very selfishly here, but makes it harder for me to do my job. How many of these lawmakers run away from Jeff Poore when they see him in the hallway? I mean, not as much as they used to, but there's still a few out there.
Well, I think you're a pretty fair arbiter, and I will continue to engage with you. I appreciate the opportunity to reach your audience and talk honestly about what's going on, the good, bad, and ugly.
Well, and we'll move on from sort of the state of affairs and the and election politics, or at least with the news gathering outside of it. But the elections on Tuesday, do you have any sense of what – I mean, it seems like we're going to see, I think, low turnout. Democrats showed up, but they can't vote Tuesday in the Republican primary.
No, they can't. And so I think you will see low turnout most likely. I hope that that's not the case. But listen, runoffs have always been a turnout game, right? They have always been about – getting your voters out and the other, you know, the opponent not getting their voters out. And so that's not anything new. I am glad that we passed a law that says, hey, if you vote in a Republican primary, you can't come, you know, if you don't vote in a Republican primary, you can't come vote in a Republican runoff. That's a good thing. And so that's helpful. I think you don't have Democrats really putting their thumb on the scale as it relates to that. So I think that is good. What concerns me more, and we've talked about this before, was several districts around the state where the Democrat turnout in the primary exceeded the Republican turnout in the primary. And you've heard recently some comments by Chairman Stadhagen about that. That's a problem in some of these more purple districts. And I am worried that that lack of enthusiasm is going to result in, or could result in losses for the caucus in both the House and the Senate. That concerns me.
Well, but I guess we know that Republicans, for whatever reason, maybe it's just sort of the Fox Newsification of things, they'll show up for the general election, even though most of the time in this state, the general election is a mere formality, that a lot of the candidates really are decided in the primary contest. But that's my hope here, that yes, we saw low turnout in, say, for example, the Huntsville area from Republicans, but maybe they're just, well, I'm saving my vote for the general election.
Okay. You're saving it. It doesn't count twice. Go ahead and use it when you can.
I know.
That bothers me. And again, that's not that's not the voter's fault, okay? Everybody's really quick to put that on the voter and say, oh, they're not engaged, they're not civic engaged, shame on them. Listen, that's our fault. That's the elected official's fault for not doing enough to excite the electorate to get out and vote.
Well,
so it's against us.
Well, let me say this. I think it's more, I mean, yes, obviously the buck stops with the elected official, but I think some of these elected officials are getting bad advice. And it goes back to our discussion earlier, but they haven't adapted to the new world we live in.
Well, that's a fair statement. And the only defense to that statement is that it's moving at a breakneck pace and keeping up with what is important to my constituency, and keeping up with how they like to be interacted with is really something. I mean, when I started in this business, making sure that you reserved the sticky note that went on the front page of the Mobile Press Register that said, be sure to vote for Chris Elliott on, July, whatever, or June, whatever, was a big deal, and you had to book that way out in advance to make sure you had that on election day and probably the Monday before. Now we don't have sticky notes. We don't have the Mobile Press Register. We don't have newspapers. We don't have any of those things anymore. And it's amazing to me how much has changed. There was a time when a candidate having a Facebook page was something just crazy and outlandish. Now it's the only way to communicate other than Instagram and Twitter. And so things change at breakneck speed, and it will be something completely different 4 years from now. And so the message to my colleagues is going to be, stay on top of it, find a consultant that is with it and up to speed on what's going on, and make sure you engage the voters where they are. Don't wait on them to come to you. They're not going to do it.
Senator, we'll leave it there. Safe travels wherever you are today, but we'll pick it up again next week.
Thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to be back home.
All right. State Senator Chris Elliott there. We got to get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Spend my dollar. Park in a holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life. Oh, so right.
Much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on What's Left. This Friday morning, coming up Monday on the program, Jennifer Fiddler and Dale Jackson and a couple of guests probably running for something will be on the show on Monday. Just a text here. Should we believe Trump this week about this time a peace deal is going to happen? I'm sure there's quite a few in your audience who believe the previous 38 times he has said it was all part of 6D chess. I don't know what else to do with that. You're right to be skeptical, and members of Congress have expressed their skepticism. But we're kind of at the mercy of the administration on this one, I'm afraid, Mike. Anyway, enough of that. Coming up here shortly, midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey Jeff, just interviewing people that are running for something.
Yeah, I tried to get Charlie the Raccoon on, and I'm not had much inroads there.
Yeah, well, he's now a superstar, gone viral out there. Speaking of that race, Wes Allen is going to join me in hour number two of the show. We'll talk with him at the 1 o'clock hour, and then here in just a few minutes, AG candidate Jay Mitchell will join me to start off the noon hour. Plus, coming up, a conversation, y'all. If you have not seen this yet, the new issue of Mobile Bay Magazine has got a fantastic write-up from Joshua Givens about Judge Roy Beans.
I saw that. It's on my to-do list.
Oh, it's fantastic. And the people he talks about there, the people that I knew from back in the day, my elders, and what was going on there. It's a fantastic write-up. He's going to join me at 12:30 to talk more about that. So y'all tune in. Your stories of days and nights and blurring in between the judges, those will be welcome.
You've been to that haunt a few times.
Yes, and I was on the edge, like, older brothers of mine were more in the age group, but I was going towards the end of it. Yes, I spent many an evening, a night at Judges, and it was a, you know, and we'll talk about the Jimmy fever that would happen. You know, the rumor mill would go out that Jimmy Buffett was going to come by and play, and some nights it was not true. There'd be tons of people in there. It was a great marketing tool. And then some nights people would say, yeah, he walked in here and there was, you know, 17 people in here. It's really cool. And Joshua does a great write-up on it. So we'll talk about that.
Had you ever seen Jimmy Buffett at Judge?
I did not. No, but I went on some of the false alarm nights. Like my brother would say, hey, it looks like tonight he's in town and probably going to be there. And everybody just kind of acted cool, like we're just there to be there. But everybody's kind of milling around to see if he'd play. He never did.
It's kind of sad to drive by where it used to be.
Yep.
Just no appetite to resurrect it or any of that, huh?
It's a question I'll have for Joshua in this. I mean, you think that brand is worth a whole bunch. You would think something could open back up on it. I don't know.
I do have a painting of Judge Roy Beans up in my house here.
Oh, that is awesome. I'm jealous.
I do. It's part of the folklore of the Jeff Poor Fair Hope Bureau.
That's cool.
All right, guys, I got to get out of here. It has been a pleasure. I will try to do better on Monday. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Cowboy.